Good morning. Happy Monday. Welcome to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. It is great to have you with us. As always, your guest list today is as follows. Jerry Rice played a couple years in the NFL. Will join us at 8 o'clock. Dante Whitner at 8:30. John Morosi at 9:30. But to the big news of the morning, Dibs, welcome back. We're already planning the 51st birthday.
Oh, it's incredible. It's good to be back. You know, the more I reflected on that, the more I was thinking, go ahead and skip my funeral whenever that day should come, whether it's today or many days in the future. That felt kind of like a nice funeral. I was glad I got to sit through it.
I feel like we've recently had this conversation of how we all want to die.
Yes.
Yes, we did.
You were here for that.
Yes, I was.
You were here for that.
Yep.
And you, of course, said you don't want to be exposed in a casket, having people screaming and falling all over.
Absolutely.
As if
absolutely.
You mean that much to the world.
You know it. Oh, Lord, he's gone. He's gone. No. Don't do it.
Keep it moving.
Yeah, keep it moving.
Dibs
in the same church.
Yes. And the same pew for a change.
And the same seat.
Absolutely.
We still haven't figured out who's on top, but we'll get to the bottom of that one
different
day.
Different urn, by the way. Separate urns for Lo and I.
Two different urns. All right. There are a lot of places we could begin. We've got to get to this Raiders game in L.A. That was not interesting to watch. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. But when neither team's trying to do anything, what do you expect? We've got the Niner-Texan game. Garoppolo no longer undefeated, so bet the under. Niner season's over. We got the Giants sweep in Cincinnati, although that sweep went the wrong way.
Wow.
And then there's this.
Here's a 3-2. Swung on. Fly ball to right.
Did it.
Back is Reddick. He's at the wall. Out it goes for Matt Olson. He walks off the Astros, and the A's are one game back in the American League West. A comeback of epic proportions. As Olson hits his 23rd home run of the year, it's party time at home plate.
That was Friday night's 4-3 walk-off win against the Houston Astros. The A's would go on to defeat the Astros, Saturday by a score of 7-1. Lost the finale yesterday 9-4, but take 2 of 3 from Houston. They have now won 5 of their last 7 against Houston. They have won 13 of their last 17 against Major League Baseball. And since June 16th, your Oakland Athletics are 40-14. 40-14, Dibs. Now, a lot of people were getting gassed up about the potential of a sweep. Let's be honest. These are still the defending champs. Taking 2 out of 3 is exactly what you set out to do. You win the series. You narrow the gap. You keep it cooking this week.
It was an incredible weekend. And, yeah, it's kind of a bummer when you lose the 3rd of the 3 when you're looking for the sweep. You had brooms out in the crowd yesterday. But an exciting game nonetheless. You had Crush Davis lighten it up. Sean Manaea with a bit of a bad beat on the cheap home run down the left field line, but otherwise he did get cuffed around on a day when the Coliseum played quite small. But you said it, Joe, you sit one game out at this point, late August. It's exactly where you want to be. It's probably way ahead of where you thought, honestly, you could be. But now that you're here playing this well, the sky is the limit for this team.
Talk of the town. I was in Chicago over the weekend visiting some friends for a bachelor party. We went to a thriller of a Major League Baseball game Saturday night, Royals at White Sox. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch it. Sister Jean throws out a pitch, beautiful curveball to open
she
the game.
Did.
The rest was straight garbage. 9 innings of garbage, although your boy may or may not have had the under.
Ooh.
That's neither here nor there at the moment. Anywho, the guys I was with, a lot of them are former baseball players. Some of them even played minor league baseball, one of which is good friends with Javi Lopez. They were roommates together in the minor leagues. They found out I lived here, and that was the first thing they brought up. What a fun baseball team. No one got too deep into the nuance, but they said that is a really fun story that's taking place. And even in yesterday's loss, Lo, still 2 out of 3 against Houston. Job well done. That's what you set out to do.
That's a great job. You played it against a team that won it all last year. You look at them. You look at the way they came out, 7-1. They motorboated them. You know, you saw the crowd. They were there. You look at the way that, you know, Crush continues to be crushed. You see everyone just kind of went and played well. They jumped on him early and just stayed on him. You're watching some of the plays and watching some of these guys stand up. The way this team is playing, they're playing with vigor. They're playing like they belong. And if you watch the way the A's, they truly believe, and I'm telling you right now, the AL West, there's a new sheriff in town, and you can say what you want to say. This is the best team in baseball right now.
Anna, you were at all three games. You were doing the in-stadium hosting. The crowd numbers were through the roof. Tell me about the atmosphere.
The atmosphere was absolutely electric all 3 days. Friday night really set the tone, especially at the bottom of the 10th when you had Matt Olson hitting the walk-off. I was in the crowd at that point, and as soon as he hit the walk-off, everybody was just so happy, so energetic, just going crazy. And then that feeling went through the entire weekend. Even yesterday when they were losing to the Astros, people still stayed pretty much to the end. They were still a pretty good crowd all the way to the end of the game.
I think yesterday, and I had it on TV when I got home, it felt as if even though they were losing, it wasn't a losing atmosphere. It wasn't a losing cause. It was, we still won this series.
Yeah.
Regardless of the fact that this game's not going to go our way, and it's Verlander. I mean, honestly, that was his 200th career win. The guy's lights out. And you know, history will tell you, any team that's lost the first two of a three-game series on Sunday, the numbers always point to winning that game. Not so much in Cincinnati, but definitely over the weekend, it still felt like it was a winning environment. Everyone knew whether or not that game didn't go their way. They lose the battle, they win the war.
And I think that the way the game started is what made the crowd still so happy, because Chappie goes yard, and then you get Crush also going deep off Verlander. And when you see Verlander at the Coliseum as an A's fan, you cringe, because you remember all the big games against Detroit where Verlander came to the Collie and shoved, and they put up his ERA low twos all time against the A's at the Coliseum. So to get a couple off him early, the crowd was into it. You thought sweep, and even though you lost the game, there were enough highlights there, and like you say, you still won the series against the defending champs, and you're just a game out, so you can rightly feel very good about yourselves.
Next seven will be three against bum Texas, four at loser Minnesota, and then you've got Houston in Houston for three before Seattle, the Yanks, and a whole lot of other stuff. What are the expectations now? Here we are, the final quarter of the season. You're a game out. You were tied for first after Saturday night. I don't think the expectation anymore is just get to the playoffs, that'd be a win. I mean, at this point, what's the expectation? What's a reasonable expectation for this club, Lowe?
Well, I tell you what the players think. The players believe they can win it all, without a doubt. I know there's out there, there's people out there. You talked about it, what, a month and a half ago? You so told people, bet on the A's. I know we don't necessarily talk about the A's all the time. You said the odds, I think they were 70 or 80 to 1. And you're like, take this bet. I'm telling you, ride with this, go with it. And you look at it now, it's almost single digits. So what does that tell you? You saw them ahead a long time ago. You watched the way this team play, and we've been saying it's one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best.
40-14 over the last 54.
This team right now, you say, what's the expectation? They believe they can play with anyone, and they've shown that. They beat Houston in the series in Houston. Now they come back and take the series here. All this doing is building confidence for a young team that doesn't have has a bunch of players that everyone necessarily don't have a bunch of household names, don't have really any. The way that they're playing right now, this team believes they can win it all. And Houston understands. I know they always say, Houston, we have a problem. Houston knows they have a problem with the A's because the A's match up well against them. So right now, I think the bar is set high for this team, and they believe that they can play with anyone, and they've shown that they can. So I think they believe that they can win it all, Joe.
Most exciting short-term proposition for the A's. If they can find a way to go 2-36 over their last 38, we're getting paid on that win total. We're getting paid
nice.
On that win total. Handed it out. This show was here for you, rooting for the A's all season long.
Back to
telling
March.
You, bet the over on the A's. Go back a month. Take them at 80-1. Here for you, the people. 2-36. Probably the easiest cash in win total history.
Assuming that they gut it out. We don't want to mush them because, you know, the show has an irregular history of mushing.
That would be a remarkable mush.
That would be Mount Mushmore, to be certain, if they finished the year at 1-37 and it didn't find a way into the postseason. But I digest. I think to your question about the expectations, if you win the division, you expect that you should be at least in the ALCS because best of seven against Cleveland, I like your chances. If you go into that wild card game, now you got to run the gamut of beating the Yankees in a one-gamer and then taking on Boston in the next series. That's a tall order, but you win.
Get him.
Yeah.
You got
to
get him.
You know, it's good to be back. Comforting to be back.
That was a fast one.
Yeah.
Some of the streaks you've put together, that was a fast one.
Yeah, it's feeling like the second preseason game.
It's quick five. Yeah, it's okay. It's a preseason five. The Niners only picked up 15 penalties over the weekend. You're fine. Reasonable expectations.
Oh, I think also ALCS. I think that's very reasonable.
Anything short was now a disappointment?
I'd be a little bummed. I mean, I'd be still happy with this season in all honesty, but I have the expectation they'll get to the ALCS. I'd be extremely disappointed, though, if they only get to the wild card game.
See, here's my question. It wouldn't be a lost season if they don't get to the ALCS.
Right.
You don't sit here and go, that was a bust. But you get the expectation so high, and you know how it works with fans. You're excited.
Thank you.
And then you work it all the way through, and if you would lose the wild card game or win the division and lose the opening series, everyone's going to point to the Royals from 2014 and all these other instances of tremendous seasons and then couldn't get it done when it mattered most. You don't want it to turn out that way, but it's set up that way because that's the history. That's the storyline that the A's are truly fighting right now. They've got to get there, but not just get there. Now you've got to go ahead and win one series. It doesn't need to be the entire thing, but one series to justify this. Once you play this well and you win this often, you got to get to the playoffs and give them something. It's like the Rams last year. Great regular season. And then Atlanta rolls right into their stadium and knocks them out of the playoffs. It's tough to call that a great season. Solid progress, but tough to call it more. We will have more on this throughout the program, but we've got to get into what happened in Houston on Saturday. The concerns we had on Friday's show that we laid out for you. Well, they reared their head in a big way. Joe, Low and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Joe, Low and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Mark it down, take a picture. Jerry Rice at 8 o'clock this morning. Played a couple years in the National Football League. Joe, Low, Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Speaking of the Niners. The Niners in Houston, Saturday, final score. Oh, no. The Texans 16, the Niners 13. A last-second drive by Houston, and Jimmy Garoppolo has officially lost a football game. What do we make of that? Do we overreact? Do we trade him?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. John Lynch had better be on the phone this morning. Otherwise, the 49er faithful will be disappointed.
Let's start with Garoppolo. 10 of 12, 136 yards, one touchdown, one interception, although you can make the case that Pettis should have caught that ball. Kyle Shanahan certainly thinks he should have caught it, but whatever. You shake it off, you move forward. Garoppolo in that game, 6 of 6 on third down through two series. He looked good. The footwork, the poise, the ability to let his receivers get down the field, get open, and hold on to that ball to the last possible second. He looked very much like Aaron Rodgers in that game Saturday night.
He did. His footwork, his ability to keep his eyes downfield, knowing and feeling the pressure, able to elude it without necessarily coming unglued and coming just like you're looking like a spaz out there, stayed compact, always in a throwing position. He goes to the fullback on one of those plays, and of course, Cal Juszczyk bails him out, the scamper, down the sideline. The fullback position is alive and well. But you look at Jimmy G, what he was able to do, Dibs, solid.
Yeah, poised. Poised in the pocket and able to go through his progressions. On that play you're talking about with Juszczyk, he clearly was wanting to go elsewhere.
No question. He quickly
looked to his second spot, and then he knew right where Kyle would be. And Kyle, shout out the fullback, was even surprised at how open he was. He just drifted out to his spot, waited for Jimmy G. Jimmy G goes through his progressions, and then boom. He gets his yak yards all the way down to the 2-yard line.
It's almost as if the Texans forgot the position existed. He was so wide open over there on the right sideline.
Say whatever, Joe. The guy, I knew it was coming.
Well, there's that one, and then later when we revisit it, it'll be, why'd you go down at the 2-yard line? Make a play, you're a fullback. Lower your head and get in the end zone, finish the play.
He's going to have it both ways. Defense is like, 44? Is that guy a linebacker? What's he doing out here?
Did that guy just step onto the field as the 13th player?
Is that what, Dibs, you had it dialed up.
I'm trying to get back in the rhythm, trying to feel, you know, like I'm back home again.
He did look good, though. He really did.
All in all, there were a lot of positives to take away. Garoppolo looked strong. Again, Marquise Goodwin, another big pass. What was that, the second play of the game? Garoppolo waits. He finds that window between the safety and the corner. Perfect touch. He was a bit critical of himself, said it could have been a little bit better of a pass. But he hits Marquise Goodwin, who catches 3 passes for 61 yards. Dante Pettis, 2 grabs for 32 yards. If Beathard doesn't overthrow that one shot to Pettis, he ends up with, what, a 63-yard touchdown in that scenario? So there were some positives to take away from the quarterback and the wide receivers. And we will hit on that throughout the course of the show, but let's get into concern number one, the running back position. Jerick McKinnon has already been ruled out for the rest of the preseason. They don't want to risk any more of an injury to their high-priced free agent acquisition. We get it. Matt Breida, out for the preseason, dealing with a separated shoulder sustained in Game 1 against the Dallas Cowboys. Work your way further down the list. Now Joe Williams is out through at least Game 1 with a fractured rib and a deep bone bruise. Raheem Mostert and McNichols didn't do a whole lot in this game. Mostert didn't get any carries, and McNichols did very little with what he had. And Alfred Morris, there's nothing. So where are they going to go? Because the running back position has suddenly become a major cause for concern.
You just named the guys they're going to have to go with: McNichols, Mostert, and Alfred Morris. And that's assuming that McKinnon can give you something in that opener. And the bigger problem for me, Lo, and this is the number one question I had to ask you about this performance: how much can we take away from their lack of an ability to run the football? Is it just that guys aren't able to go 100%? Because I know when you run the football in the National Football League, it's about imposing your will play after play. You may not get the big gainer now, but if you continue to pound it, something will break free. But preseason, you probably don't have guys who are really going full on 100%. So can you have that approach and really pound it out in the preseason?
It's going to be interesting to see how this team adjusts, because I don't think necessarily the offensive line up front is really creating a lot of holes as well. I talked about it last week, Dibs, when you're not here. It's different when you have to have those big boys up front. They're like dancing partners. You got the ace block, the trade block, all these different blocks. Are they doing them? Or is it a lot of zone blocking? Are they getting a new line of scrimmage created? Does the running back, is he getting pushed? The defense getting pushed back? Now the offensive line, now the running back's running downhill, uphill, because he's got to avoid that defense line, try to get in the next hole. If they don't get push and they don't get anything, it's not creating the running lanes that these running backs need. So now you got a guy, another guy that just went down with the ribs. That's going to be out. They're going to probably release the guy and going to have to think about settling, because he's not going to be able to play 2 weeks with broken ribs and bruised punt.
You're talking about Joe Williams, and they can put him on IR. IR set to return IR.
Yeah, I just think,
as opposed to last year where they iced him all year.
I just think,
but it's just, again, it's, for a guy that you were hoping would make an impact with
absolutely.
The Niners, we're talking 2 years in a row now.
Yeah.
They can't even get him on the field. Can't make the club.
In the tub. So I think that he's
Amen.
Gone. I think he's gone. I really believe that, mark my words, I don't think they'll put him on PUP and protect him. Mark the tape. This is going to be a situation where here's a guy been injured now for 2 years. He doesn't seem that he's durable enough. You're going to have to look at this guy and say, we're going to have to pay him to let this guy go, because you're looking at a guy that's thinking about going into the booth that I was thinking over the weekend. I said, what can the Niners do? There's a guy, I don't know if the broadcasting is paying too much, but there's a guy thinking about going into college, but being an announcer for college, that I think that they should try to take a serious look at him and bring him in here. With the Tennessee Titans, left Dallas was a great DeMarco Murray.
Oh, okay, I was wondering where you're going.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
I think that they should really take a serious look at DeMarco Murray. Here's a guy that can run, still have something left before he gets in that booth. I know he's thinking about going to the Pac-10 and start doing college ball, whatever he may go. But I think that you got to bring in a running back that's really, really dependable, because McKinnon, yes. Then after that, I'm just not sure.
3.8 yards per carry against Dallas, 3.1 yards per carry against Houston. And again, McKinnon banged up, Breida banged up, Joe Williams banged up, Morris and Mostert don't look to be long-term solutions. McNichols couldn't get anything going. All around, the position is of major concern. Here's where it gets really interesting. The Raiders might be able to do the Niners a huge favor when it comes to the running back position. That's going to come up at some point, but Raiders-Rams, full breakdown, coming up next. Joe Lowe-Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowe-Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Jerry Rice set to join us today at 8 o'clock. Dante Whitner at 8:30. John Morosi on the Streaking A's at 9:30. It's Joe, Lowe, and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. So, it wasn't just Houston and San Francisco going at it on Saturday. The Raiders were down in Los Angeles, and there weren't a ton of fans there. But according to virtually every report, and if you were paying attention to what was going on in the stands, what did it look like? 70% Raider fans at that Rams game in L.A.? That was insane.
Yeah.
How many were down there to cover that?
It's par for the course down there, though. The Raider Nation in L.A. is as strong as it is up here.
Rams 19, Raiders 15 in a game clearly nobody wanted to play. Sean McVay sat all of his key starters again for the second week in a row. Gruden did not play Derek Carr or many of the key players for the Raiders. Said after the game he didn't want LA to be able to pick up on any of their audibles or their hand signals, so they would just call a play in and they'd run that play. Very vanilla, very basic, because these two are going to go toe-to-toe in the second half of Monday night's doubleheader to open the season, week one at the Coliseum. So I don't know where you want to begin with this one, because it's tough to really dive down into the minutiae of a game no one's trying to win. But where would you like to begin? We'll start with the guy who actually played the game.
I think you look no further than the quarterback position, Joe. You guys talk about this as one of the most important positions on the team. It is. And if you don't have a decent backup, you're in trouble in the National Football League. You're in trouble. If you have a guy that can just hit the backside of a barn, you're okay. You need someone that can go in and manage games. And right now, in my opinion, I don't know if the Raiders have that. I don't know if the Raiders truly have the backup quarterback on this team.
EJ Manuel, 10 of 16 for 89 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions, but he did lose a fumble. Connor Cook, 6 of 12, 49 yards, no TDs, no INTs. The offensive line did not do that many favors. The Rams were pushing the pocket from start to finish in that game. So in terms of a clean pocket, room to step up, room to move around, the quarterbacks were given very, very little. But by and large, neither did any to distance himself in the battle for the backup job.
No, and the two things you need for a backup quarterback, from my untrained eye, never having played in the National Football League, is number one, you have to have somebody who is just competent, somebody who can get a play and run a play. The second thing you need is somebody who's not going to put the ball on the ground. Right now, in your two backup quarterbacks, you have the one guy, EJ Manuel, who's competent, but he can't stop turning it over. And the other guy, Connor Cook, who isn't a turnover machine, but he's not yet competent. So the two components are missing in both. You're one for two and you're one for two. You look at CJ Beathard, and he is competent and he doesn't turn it over much. He's not great shakes, but to Lowe's point, backup quarterback is critical if you have those two things. And right now the Raiders don't have both in the one guy.
Either guy here capable of holding down the job. If Carr were to go down, look, Carr goes down for the season, it's over. It's over for just about any team in the league if the quarterback goes down for the season. But what you really need is a guy who can steady the ship for 5 to 6 weeks if necessary. Do the Raiders have that? Do the Raiders have a guy who can steady the ship 4, 5, 6 weeks if Derek Carr were to go down?
No, even when you saw EJ Manuel hit Martin in the middle of the field, he stared him down. It was a great catch by the receiver, 13. He reaches back to bring it across his body, threw the ball behind him. That was just a hell of a catch. When you look at the quarterback position, even when the pocket collapsed, you saw it against Jimmy G and the Niners. The ability to slide in, slide out. Joe, you and I, we talked about it the other day. We can't compare these guys to Tom Brady. I understand that. But the way that he steps in the pocket with the poise and the calmness and the collectiveness, you're like, wow. It's not necessarily the delivery. It's what they're doing in the midst of the heat when all the trees are around you. How do you avoid in just little steps to get out of the way? Sometimes guys jump into a hole. They climb too far. And you're watching that with these young quarterbacks. And EJ Manuel should be past a lot of these points. Staring down guys, looking them in all the way. You got to be able to look guys off with your eyes, climb in the pocket, but with little slight movement and keeping the hands on the ball. I just thought when you look at Connor, saw guys a little pressure, got flustered, just throwing the ball, looked really sloppy. It was very sloppy play, in my opinion, by the quarterback position.
So what do you do? Do you see Gruden riding with one of these two as his backup? Do you see him maybe carrying three quarterbacks because there's not a lot of trust there? Or do you go out and try to bring someone else in?
I think you got to bring someone else in. I think you keep one of them, but you clearly got to – if you're going to keep three quarterbacks, those are not the three – well, there's one guy we're keeping, we know for sure. But those other two, it's up for grabs. I get rid of one of them. And I try to bring in someone else that's going to compete, because right now they don't have it.
Well, that's a tough choice, because you keep the more veteran EJ Manuel, obviously, in my opinion, because he's got more chops, but he's more likely to turn it over. And are you just ready to give up on Connor Cook, essentially? Then that's the hard choice, because Cook is the better long-term play, maybe. But if he's not ready now, then what good is he as a backup?
Yeah, not only that, what was he, third or fourth round pick? You don't want to be using these picks and then burning them down 2 to 3 years later. Some of these guys you've got to hit on. Some of these guys have to play foundational spots on your team. They don't have to be stars, but they've got to be guys who can make the 53 and serve some sort of role in which you can bank on them at least to a moderate extent, right?
I totally agree. Then if the situation, then you keep Cook. And if one of them not on, if you keep him, then you say, okay, here, I'm developing you. I'm going to stay with you. EJ, yeah, you're a little bit better. But what is a little bit better, guys? What does that mean? I get it. You got to say, okay, he's just a little bit better. Does a little bit better mean he's going to play one better in one quarter? Does that mean a half a game? Does it mean a whole game?
A little bit better than Tom Brady means something. A little bit better than Blake Bortles means something completely different.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I know what you're getting at.
So it's just like, so if you tell me that he has more potential than an EJ, then I'm getting rid of and saying I'm staying with him. So I look at this team, in my opinion, Gruden is going to have to make a move.
Perhaps they're a bit thin at the quarterback position, but it looks right now like the Raiders have an embarrassment of riches at the running back position. Marshawn Lynch ready to go, final season most likely of his career coming up. They sat him. You know what you have in Lynch. Great 60-yard run in game one of the preseason, even though it got called back. So he's good to go. You've got DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard, who we remember from years past. And now you've got this guy, Chris Warren. Undrafted free agent rookie out of the University of Texas, 6'2", 246 pounds, 22 years old, 18 carries, 110 yards, and a touchdown. He now, through two preseason games, has 196 rushing yards on 31 attempts.
And
now,
he runs hard. Doug
Martin's another guy, too. That is five running backs on the Raider roster who have either produced for this team or, like Warren, are making a case for the team. Is there a way in which all five of these guys are on the roster come week one? Because if they're not, the Niners, to solve their woes, might be looking right across the bay to find a new running back.
And it might be DeAndre Washington, because it seems to me that Warren's going to make this team just by the way he runs and him being possibly the heir apparent to Marshawn Lynch and that physical running style. So I don't know if he's the kind of guy who you would have show out at this level and then cut, right? Isn't that just one of the most taboo things to do, is to show how good a guy is, then try to cut him and bring him back for the practice squad? He wouldn't survive that process.
Yeah, what you would want to do is sneak him through,
right,
and get him onto the practice squad, but it's out there.
No one's
the name's out there right now. Like, everyone knows Chris Warren can make some plays. So whether or not he has a great NFL career, you're not going to be able to stash him on a practice squad.
Right.
Great point.
So
Dibs,
he's the guy I think that you end up having to keep. And if it comes down to Richard or Washington, Richard has showed a little bit more, I think. And you're going to keep Doug Martin because he's a veteran guy. He's your insurance policy.
You brought him in.
You think about cutting Martin. That's where I was going. Got where you
really?
Guys, no question.
Just admit a mistake right there on that.
Here's the thing, Joe. You already got rid of a punt returner that's in New England that's going to have a good year,
and you've traded Patterson,
and you got a third, and you gave a third to bring in a receiver that we don't know what's going to pan out. So you already
Martavis Bryant.
Exactly. So you're already in a situation. Who cares? If you have to cut Doug Martin, you already signed him, but you got warned that you can have control for 4 years. He's a rookie. He runs hard. You like him. Why are you going to keep Martin when you know that he's aging? He's a guy that has had some issues. So now you keep Warren, a young guy. You let Martin go. Marshawn Lynch is on his way out. So why would you not keep the young, durable back? And those two guys in the passing game, I don't know if I let those guys go.
You're talking about Richard and Washington.
No, this is still on the bike radio. This is one of my favorites.
Because those two guys, they're phenomenal in the pass game.
True.
Those guys, you don't find those type of guys. I don't think that he's going to let those two guys go.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We've got to break down who's to go, who's to stay, who the Niners should be looking at in case one of these guys is out the door. In addition, in an attempt to not tip his hand on Saturday, Rams coach Sean McVay, I think, totally tipped his hand, and I got a big angle for you come week one when these two actually meet. Great news for the Raiders. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowe and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, so a little bit of gamesmanship in Los Angeles on Saturday, Rams Raiders. Now, this is one of those bizarre scenarios where the NFL throws two teams against one another in the preseason that are scheduled to meet during the regular season. It's not the end of the world if it's going to happen in week 10 or week 11. A lot's going to change by then. But to put them against one another, knowing they're going to play in week one, neither coach is going to be incentivized to show anything. And no one wants to play their starters or tip their hand. So I want you to take a listen to John Gruden after the game explaining why the Raiders were so vanilla. They weren't calling audibles. They weren't using hand signals. Take a listen.
Well, I've never been in a preseason game like this. This is tough in our first training camp as a football team to have our second you know, opponent up against the team we open up with. You know, I don't know in the history of the NFL if that's ever happened. I'm not going to sit up here and cry about it because it's the same for them as it is us. But, you know, in our first year of operation here, we didn't want to play our starters. We didn't want them to hear our hand, our audibles and hand signals. And I don't think they wanted us to get a feel for them either. So it was a strange week of practice, and it was a strange ball game from that regard.
Legitimate concerns, and it's smart that you're thinking that far ahead. Sean McVay, the head coach of the Rams, is going one step further. He has not played any of his stars through either of the team's two preseason games. And you know he's not going to play the stars in Game 4, so what McVay is essentially doing is giving Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, and his big-time talent one preseason game to get ready for the regular season. Now, on one hand, you could argue, smart. Keep him healthy. We see how the preseason goes. The Chargers just suffered another season-ending injury to their secondary as the Achilles and the ACLs rack up down there. But then on the other side of the equation, there are those who advocate for intense practice because it's the best way to prepare for the intensity of a game. And if the Rams are going to be this lackadaisical about how they go about their preseason, I think there's a real-life opportunity for the Raiders to get him in Week 1. Because you could get a real slow start there. Think about it, Lowe. Tell me if I'm wrong. My thought is the Raiders are going to win the first half against the Rams. Hint, hint for those of you who like the Vegas angle. You're going to be playing at home. Coliseum's going to be rocking. Goff, Gurley, all these guys are going to have had very few game reps coming into Week 1. I think the Raiders have the opportunity to get up on them because of that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's just interesting because I haven't had a chance to necessarily watch the Rams, you know, at practice. And all I can do is tell you what I know about Wade. Wade's a guy that's going to say, guys, I need your best. I need your best. I'm not going to play you. In San Diego, a lot of the guys, he would hold out. But we would have some intense practices. And he would, you know, hey, guys, we want to go thud. We want to make sure, look, we do it right, we do it light. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play the Raiders. Because I know Gruden's pushing these guys. I just don't know. You know what they got on the outside. You know those corners position where the Rams are going to be able to lock down guys. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough sledding for the Raiders. How's that interior line going to match up? Gurley and them, like you're saying, on offense, running the ball. We know he's physical. We know Marshawn is physical. But we know the Raiders have a physical offensive line. We know what Sue and those guys can do. And I think you're right by the fact because game tempo is still different than practice, even though Wade's practicing those guys hard. The Raiders can come off and beat those guys up. Can they wear that defensive front up? You don't have the guy, you know, he's sitting out waiting to get the contract and stuff done. So if they don't have those reps together and the game time start, you're right. I think the Raiders do have an advantage. But I know one thing, Wade Phillips, he's going to come with some heat. He's going to come with some games, and it's going to be an interesting matchup.
Dibs, the way I'm laying it out, if you were so inclined to be in Vegas and you couldn't bet the draw, would you like the Raiders in the first half against the Rams? Because they're not really getting a whole lot of reps here of game action.
Yeah, I would, especially considering that their best defensive player is not yet in camp either. So to Lowe's point, you don't know how he'll be ready to go, ready to mesh and whatnot. And the rest of the defense not having had real contact, other than the padded practices, not playing in the first two preseason games. And you won't play more than a half or maybe a half and change in the third preseason game. So then you're going to take another week off. I think those guys are going to be woefully out of sync. And you can run all the games you want if you're Wade Phillips, but if your guys aren't 100% up to speed and raring to go, your stunts will be slower, all the games, the interior stuff, double mug the A-gap, etc., you're not going to be sharp until at least halftime.
Oh, you come at those tackles. You come at the tackles, and Wade's going to do that in kind of in 3-4. You come at them.
Miller, Donald Penn.
Yeah, you come at these guys and say, okay, let's see. They're going to try to get off the ball quick, and boom, I got a gun, a stunt. Now I'm going to hit the inside. I think the biggest thing what the Raiders are going to do is element of surprise. Go up tempo. Speed it up. Like you're talking about, where those off defensive line up. Make the rotation. I got them on the field. I'm going no huddle. Go with speed. Now, oh my God, I can't rotate Sue. I can't put the second guys in. That's what the Raiders going to do. The element of surprise. Go
great
quick.
Call.
No all. No huddle. Boom.
Great call right there. Great call. I love that. Now, on the flip side, however, if the Rams come out and have the season many are predicting, and you look back to a preseason in which the Stars only played in one game collectively, you've got to figure to yourself, you know what? This could be the best possible case for shrinking the preseason. Why would you need four games if a good team has shown you quarterback, running back, star wide receiver, star defensive players, none of them are going to play except for one game, and they're still going to go out and have success? At that point, shouldn't the NFL look at this and say, you know what? Outside of the potential for some money, maybe we shouldn't have these guys playing four preseason games because the injuries continue to mount up.
Yeah, but you said it first properly, outside of money, which full stop at that point if you're the NFL offices, and you don't even hear another word that you had to say because it's only about money. So unless you're going to show a model in which they could recoup those monies, they're going to continue to have four preseason games. And that means when the CBA gets reopened and they start to negotiate, the owners can say to the players, look, we understand these four preseason games are a joke. Let's make it two, but we want 18 regular season games. So you'll still have 20 games. But this change that needed to be made 10 years ago, it won't be made until the CBA in 2020.
The money, Joe, they make in those preseason, you got to realize they pay us less than minimum wage doing preseason games. We don't get those games.
Based on what they're bringing in from the fans and the concessions, you think it's a decent haul?
It's decent, but like the Coliseum for the Raiders and Rams game, they only had 40,000. That place holds 100.
But 40,000 people who are paying for tickets, parking, and concessions.
It's not bad.
And what do the players make on that?
Shoot, you make probably $1,100, $1,300 a game.
A pittance.
You're not really.
Yeah, a mere pittance out there. You know, when you get those three snaps and you jog off with a toenail, it might be possibly ingrown.
Well, I'm just saying that
I'm just joking around.
I'm just meaning the tickets are still the same thing. And besides the rate, you look at that game. Hell, you look at preseason dibs, and you look at the regs, the Rams, and don't necessarily have those type of people shows up anyway because it's L.A. So you look at a lot of other ball teams. You look at other games around the NFL. Those preseason games, a lot of them are sold out at times.
You know, we always talk about him when he doesn't play. We got to mention the fact Gary and Conley got on the field. Only faced one pass, but played a few reps. And by all accounts, everything went well.
Yeah, and I think he's healthy coming out of it. So it's great. Big exhale for Team Conley, and we're on to the next one. Third preseason game. Hopefully he can get out there and continue to stay healthy, and we can actually see him in a game that has some meaning in September.
The absence of Khalil Mack has clearly been the biggest storyline out of Raiders camp so far this year. It's also been the most negative storyline out of Raiders camp this year, but I'm starting to think that the most positive storyline is this kid Maurice Hurst, the rookie out of Michigan who fell to the fifth round because of the heart condition that was detected, I believe, at the combine. First round talent, but drafted in the fifth round because a lot of teams took him off the board due to the heart condition. He was making plays again, the speed, the burst on the inside, he recorded another sack. If this kid ends up panning out and the heart concern turns out to be nothing, the Raiders just hit the freaking jackpot right there because he and PJ Hall, we talked about him last week, how important these two rookie interior defensive linemen could be to this team. Another good preseason game.
Yeah, it's great to see, and you hope that all the medical stuff continues to be just a one-time blip in the radar, and then the Raiders would have one of the key steals. They also have Arden Key, who hasn't yet quite gotten the same amount of reps that Mo Hurst has gotten. But if he can pan out in any way, all of a sudden that risky draft, because you took both of those guys who were risks in the first five rounds. And so Reggie kind of stuck his neck out there, John Gruden obviously as well. So if Mo Hurst does pan out, imagine what that could and will do for Khalil when he returns. If you have that much pressure up the middle, you can't help but think that Mack's going to have a huge time feasting on the outside.
Is this the week? Khalil Mack, we done by the end of this week? Is he going to get in here for game number three?
I don't know the answer.
Get ready to mark the tape.
I don't think so. I don't think he will. I think he can't now. He's too far in the game.
Entrenched.
No question.
Ensconced.
Yeah, so he's going to have to stick.
Embedded, like a tick.
Yeah, so I think he holds his ground. We look at this team. This team is not better. They're not better without Mack, and I think they understand that. Mack has drawn his line in the dirt. This teams are they're far away. They're not talking. There hasn't been much communication between Mack and the Raiders organization. I don't see this guy showing up.
Do you think he's going to be around for week one?
I think he'll be.
Just skip all of camp and show up for week one and go make it rain out there on Monday night?
I think he will do that. I think you'll see him week one. I think this guy's like, why am I going to take those? I'm not going to, you know. And when he comes in week one, he's going to be on a limited pitch count.
FW.
No
for
question.
Who for what? Get those T-shirts made up.
I like that. But and you're right.
Really
even if he came in right now, third preseason game, he would probably play, a series maybe? And then fourth preseason game, he wouldn't play. So why rush back now? F-dub.
Yeah. Right.
You are right. Listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1, a radio.com station. Good morning. If you are just tuning in, we hope you had a great weekend. Thanks for joining us this morning. It's always greatly appreciated. We've got Jerry Rice in 1 hour at 8 o'clock, Dante Whitner at 8:30, and John Morosi at 9:30. In addition, the beef line's coming up at 7:30. Remember, best beef line calls get played every Monday and Friday at 7:30 a.m. However, the best of the best receive a $100 gift card at the end of the month, courtesy of our friends at Harris Ranch. There is still time to get in for today, but if you missed it,